You're listening to CLNS Media, powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/roll. Use our promo code CLNS50 for 50% off your first deposit.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. I'm Taylor McLeod, and I'll be here with Joe Choquette for the next hour, taking your calls and breaking down the action from that 119-93 Boston Celtics win over the Charlotte Hornets. And, you know, Joe, I think 6 p.m. start Sunday, that's not the most normal game time, you know, for the Celtics. We saw them struggle with a kind of weird start time. I think it was like a noon on a Friday earlier in the year against Brooklyn. Since then, they've been fine. So far, they've been fine this season, you know, adapting to pretty much everything. A game like this, you go out there, win by a substantial margin, 119-93. They traded the lead back and forth with Charlotte. Kind of throughout the first half, Devontae Graham, 5 of 6 from 3, 17 points in that first quarter. Looked like, you know, if they kept shooting like that, they might run away with it quickly. Charlotte, I'm talking about. Obviously, that didn't happen. Celtics grabbed the lead, didn't give it up. They win 119-93, as I've said a couple times now. And I think that's just a good win for the Celtics. You're looking at a team that, even though Charlotte's not a good team, these are the kind of games you have to go win if you want to be a championship contender, if you want to be one of the better teams in the conference. You have to take care of business with these lower-level teams. Charlotte coming into this game, you know, they're struggling. They play hard. They've got some talent. They're a potential trap game, especially Terry Rozier coming back. He was averaging 30-something over the last couple games coming into tonight. There's some potential for a dangerous game. The Celtics take care of business. Obviously, there's a bunch of players I want to get to. Joe, what do you see from what you saw in terms of what was most important? Obviously, I think Jason Tatum is most important. I assume we'll talk about him for a little bit. Do you agree with me that these games are so important to win in the grand scheme of things?
Absolutely, Taylor McLeod. Thank you so much for having me on. To anybody listening in, welcome to the CLNS media broadcast of the Celtics postgame. As Taylor mentioned, Celtics on top, 119-93 over the Charlotte Hornets. Taylor, to answer your question, absolutely, this is an important game. All games, to me, are important now that we have entered the back half of the last half of 2019. We're trudging forward now as we march towards 2020, and all of these games are important. And yes, to touch on your major point off the top, Jason Tatum, monster game, 36 minutes, 15 of 29 from the field, 4 from 9 from behind the arc, 5 for 5 from the free throw line. Dude put up 39 points as a plus 10 in the plus minus category. Jason Tatum had himself a game. And anybody that's listening to the CLNS Media Celtics post-game broadcast will know that I have literally held the shovel of the grave digging for Jason Tatum on his off nights. And I do that mainly because I realize that this individual for the Boston Celtics has a high potential ceiling. And when he has games where he throws up 6 points, it is not an Al Horford type game where you're looking at the little things that Jason Tatum is doing in the paint, and little things that Jason Tatum is doing on the wing. At the end of the day, when Jason Tatum has a sub double digit game, it's because Jason Tatum had himself an off game. However, that all being said, tonight, when you throw up 39 points, I don't care if it's against the Charlotte Hornets, the Miami Heat, the Orlando Magic, or the LA Lakers, you are balling. And tonight, Jason Tatum was balling, hands down, twice on Sunday. Jason Tatum had himself a game tonight. It was also nice to see contributions from Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker. I thought Semi Ojeleye had himself a little bit of a game going on, but let's not bury the lead. Grant Williams had himself an also great game as the sixth man off the bench tonight. But yes, my star of the game tonight, Mr. Taylor McLeod, goes to the off-mentioned, off, I don't know, heralded as too loose with the ball in the paint, too loosey-goosey when entering the lane, too flip Jason Tatum, who threw himself up a 39-point night tonight. I thought that this Celtics win, albeit in blowout style near the end, was a very close, nail-biting game. I thought the Celtics played a decent game. As you pointed out, going into the half, it was a far tighter game than the second half shows. However, Jason Tatum, hell of a game. Hands down, no questions asked. Flipping that switch, I'd like to know what your thoughts were for the one and only Semi Ojeleye jumping into a starting role and having some contributing points over his 11 minutes.
Yeah. So, you know, I do want to, I think I want to stay on Tatum for a little bit longer, but like Semi, the thing about Semi is he does what he's supposed to. He's been knocking down threes a little bit more this year than we've seen him in the past. My biggest criticism of Semi has always been that he's been the same exact player he came into the league as. This is year three now. He plays the exact same style of ball. And it's not like he's going to change up his style. He's a 3-and-D player. That's what he is. That's what he's always going to be. But it's not like he was hitting more shots or doing more. Lately, he's been hitting more shots. I feel more confident that his shots are going down. He's still a good defender. Shemmy's another one of the players, and I do want to talk about the bench unit. I've got a couple notes about the bench unit, where he fits into this unit of players that no one's necessarily a standout bench scorer or standout at any one thing. They just work so well together, and they're very cerebral, very smart players. But, you know, pushing that aside, I do want to stick with Tatum for a little bit because if you've been listening to any of the shows that I've been on this year, if you've seen any of the videos that I've made with Bobby, a couple weeks ago, Bob and I made a video, who's the best player in the Celtics, you know, in the YouTube comments, a bunch of people were, you know, freaking out saying that Bob and I were trying to throw a divide in the Celtics, whatever. I said Jason Tatum. I've said Jason Tatum is going to be the best player in the Celtics since the beginning of the year. That's a take that, you know, I made then. I didn't think it was Atlantis then. I don't think it's Atlantis now. I think he's on the right track. Obviously, Joe, you threw out the numbers, 39 points. And when you say that he, you know, you don't notice the little things with Jason Tatum, I think that this year you're starting to really notice the little stuff a lot more. Like, you look at his other stats, he still finishes with 12 rebounds, only 2 assists, but he has 3 blocks and a steal. And there was one play earlier in the third quarter. I thought the Celtics actually did a very good job of letting Tatum expose a ton of mismatches tonight, especially against Rozier and Malik Monk. Third and fourth quarter, he was just eating from all three levels, getting to the basket, shooting mid-range, shooting threes over those two guys, and there was nothing they could do, much smaller players, and they were just letting Tatum eat. But there was one possession in the third quarter. Tatum had the ball on the left wing. He had, you know, Terry Rozier ISO'd, and then Semi Ojeleye backdoor cut from the weak side, and Tatum just hits it for the easy dunk. I don't know if Tatum does that last year. I don't know if he does that the year before. I think he probably dribbles Rozier into a, you know, a turnaround mid-range jumper, which no matter the argument against the mid-range too, I think that is a big part of Tatum's game. And, you know, sometimes it's not a terrible shot, but I think that's a place where we may have used to seeing Tatum fall into the trap of just shooting over the smaller player because he is, you know, 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", maybe with that reach. You know, he makes that nice pass to Semi Ojeleye. So I think we're seeing a guy who, obviously, his biggest impact is always going to be scoring. The 39 points, that's the biggest thing. He put up 24 against Dallas, 26 against Detroit, 39 tonight. But he is getting a lot better at those other little things, and he is developing into a much more well-rounded basketball player. And I really think games like tonight where everyone kind of steps aside and the team just gives him the keys, you get to see him really flourish in doing all those other things. You there, Joe? All right. So in talking about Jason Tatum, you know, I think my biggest thing that I have seen over the past three games, because I think these past three games have been especially important, is I think there's a lot more confidence in his game, not just the types of shots that we've talked about so often, the coming off screen, shooting the pull-up three, shooting the pull-up jumper, shooting the transition three as opposed to the long two. I just think that there's a much more confident player, and nights like tonight are where you see that confidence, where you see that confidence coming out. And, I mean, you have the third and fourth quarter where Tatum goes off, especially that fourth, and he extends the lead long enough where you do get to see Taco fall. So I think he really turned in the performance of the night, and I think he's on his way to becoming the best player on this team.
Taylor McLeod, yeah, am I back on the air?
Yeah, we just had some technical difficulties there. Joe dropped. A couple callers were just sitting in the back whispering Romeo and Taco. So I think went on a whole rant about Jason Tatum.
No, you did.
I don't know how much of you heard. But
I heard most
of it.
That's
how I feel about Tatum.
Yeah, no recap needed. I know where you stand on Jason Tatum. And, you know, to counterpoint that slightly, I will tell you this. So I have closely, not as closely as you watched a former point guard for the Boston Celtics, his meteoric rise through the college ranks and into the NBA and eventually to the Celtics and now onto the Brooklyn Nets. But I will tell you that I have watched Jason Tatum's rise through the Celtics organization to date. And I will tell you that when I look at this roster, say 1 through 8, because that's really all that, let's be honest, Taylor, that's all that really matters. It's 1 through 8. When I look at 1 through 8, the best player for the Boston Celtics, hands down, no questions asked. And I've come a 180 full circle on this, is Jaylen Brown. I will argue that until the death of me. You can put Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown as 1A.
I do like to make the distinction that, like, Kemba Walker and Gordon Hayward are the all-stars on this team. You know what I mean?
No,
like
we're second tiering right now, brother. We're second tiering. Like, and when I look at second tier opportunities to become first tier.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
Yeah. When I look at when I look at second tiers with the potential to become first tier, and when
Absolutely.
I look at second tiers that not only have the potential to become first tiers, but have the first that have the opportunity to become first tier impact players, it really, to your point, limits the field between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And when I look at both players, you know, anybody that's listening knows that it's a tough pick for me for two reasons. Number one, I'll just be honest right off the top, without any fluff involved, I am not a huge fan of Jason Tatum's game. I don't like the way he's careless with the ball in the paint. I don't like the way he seems to lollygag through the shot clock. Jason Tatum, not my top pick in the second tier to become a first-tier all-star player in the NBA. However, ask me this last year, I would have reluctantly picked Jason Tatum. However, in the 2019-2020 NBA regular season, if you were to ask me from a second-tier player who has the opportunity to become an NBA all-star and an NBA all-pro year in and year out, it's Jaylen Brown. Not only does Jaylen Brown offer you the opportunity to become a creative and innovative offensive player with the ball in his hand, Jaylen Brown also has the opportunity to be that defensive stalwart on the other side of the ball. When I look at complete NBA potential players and you pit me against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, I am picking Jaylen Brown. And this is a guy who I was so hard on last year. And I was hard on him for the simple fact that I, along with Nick Sesento, who's also a host and a co-host here on CLNS Media for Celtics Post Game Live, we both realized very early on that Jaylen Brown possessed the ability to see the court in a way that very few NBA starters as is in the league sees the court. An NBA player who has the ability to facilitate the ball when the shot's not available and to knock down the shots when those shots are needed and those shots count. If you give me a 5-second timer and the ball is dropping, I'm picking Jaylen Brown every single time, twice on Sunday. And it's no knock against Jason Tatum. The only knock is that I find Jason Tatum's game to be too sloppy. Sloppy with the ball, whether it's too far away from the body while dribbling through penetration, or if it's too careless with the ball on a dribble penetration step back, whether it's a three or a long two. I just find his handling of the ball too suspect to put him above Jaylen Brown. And when we're talking about this type of delineation between two players, we're talking about a very fine line. Like on any given Sunday, I might pick Jason Tatum, but when I look at the overall picture, the NBA career, the ability and the ceiling for the potential, Jaylen Brown's my pick. I'm okay to go against Jason Tatum in that regard, but Jaylen Brown is my pick for the best player on this team to make the next step to that all-star, all-pro level.
Yeah, and obviously, like you said, like it's a very fine line. And the fun part of being a Celtics fan and in dealing with this team as much as we do is that we don't have to pick between the two of them.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, Jaylen just signed that extension. Jason Tatum was talking about wanting to play in Boston, wanting to be teammates with Jaylen
for a long
time.
Oh, he's due for that extension. You know it, and I know it, Taylor.
No, yeah, and they're both developing so quickly, and they're developing into efficient scorers. And for all of their flaws, like while Tatum may be a little bit more still finesse in his game, I think he attacks the rim a lot more. Jaylen is much more, you know, put his head down, get to the rim, get to the line. And whereas, like, you know, Jaylen doesn't do some things well, Tatum does those well. I think their games play off each other so well. They've both talked about that in interviews. And the fun part about, like I just said, being a Celtics fan, dealing with this team, is that you don't have to pick between the two. I mean, we're looking at a team out in L.A. with two wing scorers who are two of the five or six best players in the game playing on the same team.
Right.
It's possible. It's doable. I think I don't want to make this comparison, but I think there's an easy Kawhi, Paul George, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum comparison out there. I think that's like an easy parallel to make right now. Obviously, I'm not going to do that. We're dealing with, you know, championship level players and, you know, third and fourth year players. But I think their games complement each other so well. And you look at a night like tonight, obviously Tatum scores 39, but Brown has a nice game. Kemba has a nice game. And when those three are scoring, especially with the, you know, absence of Marcus Smart, absence of Gordon Hayward, when those three can really click all together, and Kemba Walker, for being the all-star he is, for having, you know, this is the best team of his career, and he could take all the shots. He does take a lot of shots. He's, you know, obviously probably their best scorer still. He lets those two guys just go for it. And Jaylen goes for it, and Tatum's getting better at, you know, just getting to the rim, putting his head down, and just going for it. And it's really fun to watch, and I can't wait to see how it keeps progressing, because my favorite part so far about watching those two is, like you said about Brown's vision, I think Tatum has very good vision too. And seeing those guys go from head down wing scorers, slashers, you know, Tatum little catch and shoot his first year, to guys who have the ball in their hand and they're making decisions and they're making the right decisions, has been so fun to watch. And it makes me so excited to see, you know, how far these guys can go.
Absolutely. I mean, the only point I'd bring into that is when you look at, specifically because you brought it up, let's talk about court vision, right? This season, the 2019-2020 NBA regular season, now at December 22nd, after beating the Charlotte Hornets at home 119-93, when you look at the season at hand, the number of games that have been played, and now the Celtics are 21-7?
Yeah, something like that.
13-1 at home.
Yeah.
What's that? 20-7? Okay.
Yeah.
So they're 20-7. When you look at over the course of the 27 games that have been played, when you look back at that, is it more Tatum making that heady NBA basketball elite move on the court with the ball or facilitating the ball to the open shooter, or has it been Jaylen Brown? When I think back over 27 games, it's Jaylen Brown, and it's not even effing close, Taylor.
I think it
so
is.
That's
I
why
think it's a lot more close.
The
I
ceiling where I do
close,
for Jaylen Brown over Jason Tatum. I don't, and to your point, I don't want to discount Jason Tatum's game in the slightest. He's a great player in the NBA. It's just that I think that, you know, personally, gun to the head, make a decision. You have one game to win. Who are you going with on the court at that exact moment? Gun to my head, it's Jaylen Brown over Jason Tatum every day. Just because
I mean,
he possesses a little bit better basketball IQ, so to speak. But, you know, even furthering that down the line, just a smidge. I mean, tonight was a regular Saturday night, mid to late December NBA regular season game. When you extrapolate this out a little bit further, Taylor, and you start thinking about this rotation that the Celtics have, and thinking about this rotation as a healthy rotation to include Gordon Hayward and Marcus Smart into the mix, when you look at what the traditional starting five on this team should look like and the 1, 2, 3, and 4th person off the bench, do you think this team is currently constructed to make a deep run into the NBA playoffs? And before you answer that, let me just – I'll throw my opinion out there, and then I'll throw it right back to you. But my opinion is that they are not necessarily a starting impact, but a role player impact, power forward, and true center away from being what you would consider if you were looking at NBA basketball through today's lenses. At what you would be looking at is a complete and multidimensional NBA team. So when you look at this current roster and you look at opportunities that are in front of Danny through the draft picks he's made, through the players that are on this team, do you see an opportunity for them to improve in either of those positions, or do you have a different view as to what this team needs or how it's currently constituted moving forward?
So I'm obviously like on the very young end of the spectrum, you know, being 21. So like my experience as in it, this isn't like, this is just how I end up coming from it. Like my experience with Boston sports, especially Patriots, Red Sox, is there's expectation of winning. So I have like a definitely more optimistic outlook about things like this than maybe some other fans do. I thought this team was maybe not championship contending, but I thought that they were one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference and go deep into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference since opening day, since training camp, since the offseason. The way Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are playing, you've got two 20-point scorers there. Kemba Walker's another 20-point scorer. Gordon Hayward can go get you a quiet 20 whenever he wants it. Marcus Smart, vastly improved player, was making a case for Defensive Player of the Year before this eye infection. You've got the bench isn't full of guys who are your championship caliber guys. But like I said, we're going to definitely get into it because I think I'm glad you brought this up because tonight's game and the last three games really have really been showing you more of the puzzle pieces falling into place, how they're going to be like solidified because we're for the first quarter of the season now. So you're starting to see, you know, some stuff, you know, solidify. So I do think this team is built as currently constructed to go deep into the playoffs. If you look at the Eastern Conference, Philadelphia is kind of a mess right now. Miami plays extremely hard and I would still be worried about them. And obviously Milwaukee, they have the best player in the league. Giannis is unreal. I mean, his numbers aren't as good as James Harden, but he's playing like 20. He scored a triple-double in 22 or 26 minutes last night. He's doing unreal stuff. So whether or not it's championship contention level, I think unless you have one of the best, you know, two, three, four, five players in the game, and the Celtics don't have that to compete with Giannis, I don't know how you deal with that necessarily, but I do think this team is going to go.
And it's hard to argue with that. I mean, what your hope is that if you end up in an Eastern Conference final or even a second round playoff matchup against Milwaukee, you hope that Semi Ojeleye, you hope that there's a reason you are carrying his body on your roster. Now, I don't think anybody, whether you're young or old or a casual watcher or an everyday watcher, I don't think anybody can argue the fact that Semi's had a slow start to this season, hasn't really rounded into form. Brad almost seems to be forcing the minutes through injury to Semi over other opportunities. Tonight, Semi only got 11. He got the start, but he only played 11 minutes while Grant Williams filled in with 22 on his own. I don't think Grant Williams is the answer either. I think that there is a definitive drop off at the power forward or at the four spot after Tatum. And not that you need to match Tatum's intensity or his scoring potential, but you have to be at least a decent contributor. Tonight, Semi was 2 for 3 from the field, 1 from 1 from behind the arc. He put in 5. Williams in his 22 minutes was 5 for 6 from the field and 1 for 2 from the arc. So if you look at it all in total, you're 2 for 3 from behind three and you're, what is that? 7 for 9 in the field. You'll give that over the course of a game for your power forward? Hell yes. But there's something else to be spoken for in regards to freeing up space on the floor for your skill players to operate, your skill players like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kemba Walker. There's a spacing issue that regardless of what the end box score shows for stats, and this goes back to, you know, if you're an NBA, if you're an MLB follower, this is like the Billy Beane theory of stats versus performance on the field and finding a delicate balance between the stats that a position will put up at the end of a course of a baseball or an NBA game and the actual impact that a player has on the flow and play of a game. And those are two very different perspectives. Now, when you look at the way Semi and Grant Williams played the four tonight, they did phenomenal from an output perspective. 17 points, they killed it from the field, they killed it from behind the arc. That's what you're wanting from your four, but did they create the spacing on the floor? And this happens to be a Celtics team, specifically with Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum is one of those players, to your point, Taylor, that has these flashes of ultra-dimensional, meaning that he can create or adapt to the situation that's performing on the field or on the court. Jaylen Brown is more of a reactionary type player. He's not necessarily going to create, but if you provide even the monicum of a seam in the paint, he's going to exploit your weakness. They're two very different players with two very different approaches. And at the end of the day, it comes down to which one you favor the most. I happen to favor Jaylen Brown's. I know that if I put a gun to your head, you pick Jason Tatum. But, you know, there's no wrong answer.
That's not true. Like, Jaylen Brown has been my guy since they drafted him. The thing, like, I still
higher ceiling than Tatum?
No, I don't think he has a higher ceiling than Tatum. I think Tatum has, like, one of the best players in the league ceiling because he's an incredible defender.
Really?
And his offensive game is just so good already, and he's 21 years old. Yeah, no, I mean,
I just
Tatum is
very just
Tatum
too
is
much
six
to
foot ten. He's a good defender and he's becoming a good playmaker and he's like a very good scorer. But like I don't think that means there's a cap to Jaylen Brown's ceiling. I think that they both have top 10 player in the league ceiling. They were both the number 3 pick in the draft for a reason. It's not like this should be surprising.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh yeah, absolutely. You can't go wrong with either.
No, but if you look at that power forward position, that four position, you've got three guys who can all play. Obviously, Jaylen Brown plays the two, but he's definitely more of a three in my eyes. But you've got three forwards.
Oh, absolutely.
Three bona fide, very good forwards, and Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown. Obviously, Marcus Smart can guard a lot bigger players. So once those two come back, Brad's always done a very good job of stacking lineups, especially this year where he's had, you know, a combination of two of those scorers. So if you have your top four scorers, Kemba, Gordon, and then the Jays, he's done such a good job of having two of those guys on the floor with the bench players. So you have the scoring and everything. Obviously, scoring's been an issue for this team, or at least we thought it was going to be. My thing with going out to find another four or going out to find a five, obviously I'd love to find a five. I think that is
we gotta
the most
find
important
a five.
Thing. I think that's the most important thing the Celtics need. After last year, with all of the turmoil, whatever, if I'm the Celtics, I'm not in a rush to mess with something that's working so well. That's my bottom line. Like, I think you have a bunch of guys who fit very well into what you're doing, and I think someone like Grant Williams, who goes out and has a, you know, career high, I think it's only 12 points, but the past two or three games, we're seeing more of that two-time SEC Player of the Year, Grant Williams, that we saw at Tennessee. And I think with more and more games, we're going to start to see, like, these puzzle pieces are going to fall into the perfect places, barring injury. So you might not need to go get that forward depth. Obviously, like I said, if they can swing something for a five, you hear about Steve Adams, you hear about Kevin Love. I think you'd have to move a lot of crazy stuff to deal with those contracts. But you need that center spot. I do agree there. But in terms of the forwards, I think Brad can really cover up a lot of that with the talent he has at forward. In like a lot of defensive versatility and stuff like that.
So let me tell you a conspiracy theory and a theory. Theory is you've won me over on the four spot, but absolutely, I think you agree with me that you need some sort of better solution at the five than Enes Kanter and Daniel Theis.
Yeah, because if Time Lord's going to be hurt and can't develop quickly, then you have to – like something has to happen. But – I wouldn't do something for the sake of doing something. I'm only moving stuff if it's perfect.
Absolutely. And I can't agree with you further anymore on that, Taylor. However, that being said, you know, I tell everybody that listens to the CLNS Celtics post game podcast and broadcast. Again, just recapping for anybody tuning in, Boston Celtics win 119-93 over the Charlotte Hornets. Bit of a blowout game. It was tight early, and then it just got kind of out of hand for Charlotte down the line. However, Taylor and I are kind of chatting about the four and the five. I brought up the opportunity to upgrade the four and the five. Taylor kind of has convinced me that with a healthy Celtics lineup, absolutely the four is pretty much covered. And I get that, and I totally agree with you. I'm not going to lie, but it does leave a glaring opening at the five. When you think about your fives, you have Taco Fall on a back and forth contract to Maine. You have Enes Kanter, who is serviceable, but
yeah, he's
not necessarily killing the world defensively. He's in the paint. He's disruptive. Is he a space creator? For sure he is. Tonight he was a plus 17 in the plus minus. 24 minutes, he went 3 for 7 from the field, 2 for 2 from the line. He had a total of 8 points. Good game overall, but if I'm looking to upgrade my talent to quote-unquote championship level, when I look at the other fives around the league, when I look in Philly, there are things that I think we have to do that we don't have the personnel for currently constituted on this team. So, Taylor, begs the question, when you look at your new and your bottom half of your roster – coming into the winter months now, this is when we make our bones, when we make our moves. If we're a mover or a shaker, we're either buying or selling in the next 2 months. When you look ahead at that, who are possible movable pieces to bring in a piece at that five spot? Because my conspiracy theory, that's my ask you about a theory. My conspiracy theory is, do you think the aversion, and again, I'm throwing spaghetti at the wall to see if it sticks, but do you think the aversion to playing Taco Fall on a regular basis and letting him make his bones in the NBA is partly due to the fact that if you insert a Taco Fall type player onto your NBA roster, you almost have the Shaq effect when Shaq was fresh out of LSU. Now, again, I'm older than you, so I remember when Shaq played at LSU. I remember when Shaq was in the March Madness tournament, and I remember when Shaq was drafted by the Orlando Magic. Keeping that in mind, Taco Fall is a generational height build type player like Shaq was. Do you think the aversion to bringing Taco Fall into the mix of things is because you would have to take the ball out of the hand of your true scorers, being the two J's, Walker, Smart when he's on the court, Hayward, because you would run the offense for a guy that large? The fact that he doesn't have to leave his feet to throw the ball in the hole, that could change the entire offensive rhythm of your team. Do you think there's any aversion to putting him in meaningful long-term minutes because it has to change your entire base basketball philosophy going into games? Those are my two points.
I don't know if
you comment.
So I think with Taco, the thing about Taco Fall is that for as tall as he is, he moves much better than I ever expected him to, and he's also built.
Yeah.
He's much stronger than I, you know, thought he was. He like the reason he doesn't play is he'll get killed on defense. Especially in like the modern day NBA, obviously the Warriors don't have that, you know, the death lineup anymore. But you've got so many lineups. Like I'm watching the Clippers right now. Like Montrezl Harrell, smaller than Taco Fall, but he's gonna run him into the ground. So I think there's like certain things like that. And especially if you get a five who can spread it out and shoot, you're gonna have Taco in no man's land. It's not like Taco Fall is like a Rudy Gobert type where he's Defensive Player of the Year, so you can stick him in the middle and be like, "Nah, do your thing."
Not even close.
Because it's that important. In terms of offense for Taco, I think Taco's offense is he's a good screen setter. He sets those elbow screens and he just rolls to the hoop. So he's got your 2019 NBA center offense down, rolling to the hoop, catching lobs. So I think that's important. What I want to see and what I've wanted to see for a year now is for Robert Williams to be the guy.
But he's not stepping up.
No, I mean, well, he's hurt right now and he also is young. He's shown that he is very raw and not as polished as you want your center to be.
But Taylor, last year he got a lot of minutes.
He didn't get a ton of minutes.
You would expect a further development this year than what you're getting.
You
have to admit that.
He played a lot in Maine last year. He played a lot in Maine last year. Cantor's played a couple more minutes than I thought. So combine that with the injury. Right now they're playing center by, you know, by committee.
Committee.
If you want to win titles, I don't know if you can do that. But at the same time, I'm not moving anything stupid if it's not perfect, because the bad part about this, how the Celtics roster is built, is that all those young guys are on I'm talking like the rookies are on such small contracts.
Right.
Then you've got three contracts that are big at the top. So the player that you look to trade in all this is Marcus Smart, because he's really one of their only mid-level contracts.
I cannot do it.
Exactly. So right now I'm not looking to throw a wrench in any of this. I think Brad is coaching well enough where they're covering for some stuff on the back end. And if they really need to make a move, if they feel like it's the right thing, if Danny feels it's the right thing, the amount of times he's admitted that a lot of last year is on him, that move will be made. Like I said, Kevin Love, Steven Adams are intriguing pieces, but those are big contracts and you're going to have to move a lot to get them. So I want another five, but it is what it is. As long as Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are on this team playing as well as they are, I'm confident in the team, especially with the things around them. So that's kind of where I stand with all this. The bench unit, I really like the bench unit, and I want to talk about it a little bit more. You know, just a reminder, we're going to get to these call lines quick. 347-215-7771. We got about 20 minutes left. 347-215-7771. 941, what do you have for us?
What's up, Taylor? What's up, Joe Show?
Nick Sesento!
I knew it was Nick, but I just had to play it safe. What's up, Nick?
Yeah, I'm going to have to I respect the Jason Tatum take, although I know Joe Show knows that I agree with him on the Jaylen Brown and the J versus J, fire and ice,
hey,
kid and play, whatever
you
want to call it.
I do really, I do want to make a note, though, Nick, and you've worked with me long enough to know Jaylen Brown is like my guy. This isn't me going
yes.
against Jaylen Brown. Like, this is
sure.
– I think those two have potential to be – I think those two players have the potential to be, like, very, very special together.
And they need to stay together. I think
absolutely.
you have an incredible, I think even more than a big three with this team. I think this team is extremely well composed, I guess, well put together. I think you have a complete team. The one thing I'm going to disagree with, though, and I appreciated the Jason Tatum best player on the Celtics hot take, but this need for a five or the upgrading the five, whoever brought the topic up, I missed who introduced the topic, but this team, first of all, who is that player? I know I heard Steven Adams mention, I heard Kevin Love mention the money that isn't there, and
yeah.
who's the player that you dangle, but we were coming off a game where Enes Kanter just had, what, like 12 rebounds? You know, a pretty solid, I think it was must have been
13.
A double-double, or close to 13 rebounds, close to a double-double game. I don't have the box score open in front of me anymore. But he had
13 and
8 points and 13 rebounds. And then you had the Philadelphia game where not the Philadelphia game, the Detroit game, where he had 18 rebounds, out-rebounding Andre Drummond, who's been another player that Celtics fans have kind of been hinting at, maybe Andre Drummond, maybe not, please, no. And then you had the game against Philly where, you know, no, did they shut down Joel Embiid? No, they didn't. They didn't have a full roster either. I think if Marcus Smart were in the game, if, you know, Lob Williams were in that game, you have other weapons to throw at Joel Embiid. But Enes Kanter did have, I think, 20 points and, I think, 9 rebounds or something like that. Daniel Tice had maybe even more. Daniel Tice had 16 points, 36 points against Joel Embiid. I think these Celtics are doing just fine, especially considered they're ninth in the league overall in rebounding
exactly.
and
100%.
Six in block shots. I mean, I don't know what people are really, you know, fiending for at the five, and I don't know who that player is and how they're going to get him. So, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me, like, this whole thing about the five.
That's a good point. It's like, would you like to upgrade the five? Yeah, like, obviously. Like, you look at the team, like, that's probably the weakest out of the starters. That's the weakest. But you make a good point. And my biggest thing, as I said, is if it's working right now, I'm not in any rush to change it. I think that they're playing well enough. And for all the shit that Kanter gets online, I think he does some stuff. Like, he misses a lot of, like, little bunnies, but will get his own rebound and put it back in. And it's, like, gives me heart palpitations every time it happens. But he's also played in a lot of big series. And obviously, I talked to Snotty about it a couple weeks ago. He's got the video clip of Billy Donovan saying, like, I can't play this guy, like, get him off the floor. But he's played in a lot of big series, like, a lot of big playoff series. So I think you're right. Like, for all the shit he gets, I don't think Kanter is that terrible of a piece. And if you're winning ball games, if you're in the top half of your conference, I don't understand. I disagree with a rush to make a move. If a move falls into your lap, then sure, make it. But I'm not trading our only mid-level contract in Marcus Smart / pick / other whatever pieces to make a move for the sake of making a move.
And one last thing, in reference to center by committee, who was the superstar center of the last, I don't know, let's say, you know, 3, 4, 5 NBA champions, like going in consecutive, like who was the center for the Cavs when they won? Who was the center, I mean, the true center for the Golden State Warriors? Because I know we like to put Draymond Green out there in the death lineup or whatever, but who was actually their center when they won? Who was the center of, you know, whatever team won before them? Like, who was the true center on those Miami Heat teams? I mean, like, you know, there was a lot
of,
you know, committee.
Right. Yeah, like, obviously last year, the Raptors made the Gasol trade, and I think that did kind of put them over the top because of how smart
right.
Marc Gasol is. And then, but you're right, though. Like, you don't need that stereotypical center. I mean, it would be very nice to have, but I don't think you necessarily need that. It would just be nice to have. And I really want to drive this point home. If it's not broke, don't fix it right now. Like that, like
yes.
for me, it's like they're winning ball games.
Yep, I agree with that 100%. And I do think one last thing. I do think Taco Falk will be used a little bit more. I think just – and it's not to rely on him. I don't think he's going to take the ball away from anybody. I think, you know, you just – you give him looks when the looks are available. But I think – and you even saw it tonight. When he is standing in the paint, people don't go in there. Now, obviously, he's not going to be effective in a switch, you know, in Brad Stevens' main switch defense. But Brad Stevens has been known to throw things like zones out there for, you know, a few possessions or a few, you know, series. He's been known to do different things with the ball. I think having Taco Fall as, you know, another piece to that, you know, however many headed monster the center is at this moment in time with Daniel Tice, with Enes Kanter, and Lob Williams not there, but, you know, getting there, I think, and once he heals from his hip contusion and whatever that is. And then you throw Taco Fall in there for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes just to clog up the lane. He stands there with his arms up. He has a 10-foot-2, you know, reach. That block that he had in this game is a perfect example. People get scared when they see how much space he takes up in that lane, and I think he would be a reasonable weapon, not a focal point, not somebody you're going to rely on for every game or every series if he ever gets, you know, on the actual roster, but somebody that you can use as another tool to throw another weapon, because he is a physical freak in a very good way, and he has a lot of those tools that you mentioned, Taylor, strength and, you know, deceptive, you know, foot speed that you wouldn't expect from a guy. He can move. And as someone who lives in Central Florida myself, I live in Tampa. UCF is in Orlando. I went to USF. UCF is our rival school. They've been doing better in sports recently than I would like to admit. I watched him in college. I didn't think he was going to be as fleet of foot as he's shown in the few, you know, in the light work that he's put in for the Celtics. And one last statistic, I know I said one last thing, but I just want to point something out real quick. Taco Fall going into this game was averaging, and I know you don't like these stats, Taylor. I think it was you that said you don't like the per 36. Taco was averaging 40.5 points, 22.5 rebounds, and 4.5 blocks per 36 minutes in the NBA. I rest my case. It's Taco time.
Hey. Thank you for the call, Nick. James Harden, eat your heart out, per 36. Joe, I do want to bring in our fearless leader, Bobby Manning. I do want to talk about a couple more things with him.
Bobby,
just, you know, quick thoughts about the game tonight. What'd you see from the game? What'd you think of Jason Tatum putting up 39?
I'm thrilled with what Tatum's done recently. And
thank you.
I think what he did tonight was secure that spot on the All-Star team. These next week or two for him are going to be right for the picking. I mean, the stretch ahead is just ridiculous. Toronto missing Siakam and Gasol. They have the Hornets again on New Year's Eve. Washington, a couple other just easy teams that this Celtics team, the way they're playing, could tear through. And that's Tatum. He's going to be able to rack up the points over the next week or two into the new year, and that could be the stretch that ultimately secures his spot in the game. After the Pistons game, obviously they both went off in that one too, Brown and him. And I still favored Brown a little bit between the two of them. The efficiency is still what I preferred between those two players. And honestly, I felt that if Hayward came back, the way Kemba's played overall this year, the three All-Stars would have been Brown, Kemba, and Hayward. But Hayward remains down. They're probably better off resting him and really figuring out what this is going on with his foot. And then your three All-Stars will ultimately be Tatum, Brown, maybe Kemba. We'll see where Kemba's headed because he's had a rough week or so. But Tatum has just reached a new level. And you know what I love, Taylor, is that he was struggling so mightily to be in the air around the basket. And it looks like he, week by week, has started to solve this. Watching film, staying aggressive, continuing to take shots in the lane, taking a ton of shots, and the Celtics need him to do it. He's very aggressive with his shot, and they don't have to urge him to get a ton off at all. And honestly, I don't love that he's down in the low 40s as he was to start the year, but if he's in the mid-40s, it isn't great, but the volume of scoring he gives them, which they need, is everything. And man, it is just something to see the way he manhandles defense this year. He's reached another level. Tonight was a career high, as everyone knows. And these two right now are just a sight to behold. I mean, how many times have we talked about trading both of these guys? This is the reason that you stick through with them and trust them. And they're as good as any wings in the NBA right now. Maybe save for Giannis, Harden, those level of guys. They're just on a tier below.
Yeah, and I want to bring you back in. You know, we got 10 minutes left, Bob. I do have one more question for you. But, Joe, can you tell that Bob and I spend a little bit of time together in terms of how we feel about Tatum?
Yeah, it's absolutely pretty evident. And before I give my full take on that, since I have the boss on the phone and one of the OGs and Taylor McLeod, I would be remiss if I didn't use this opportunity to talk about one of the sponsors tonight that makes sure that Bobby, Taylor, myself, and Nick get to do these post games on CLNS Media, and that's HelloFresh. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. You can get easy seasonal recipes and pre-measured ingredients delivered right to your door. All you have to do is cook and enjoy. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/CLNS80 and enter CLNS80 in the promo code window. By doing so, you're going to give yourself $80 off your first month. This is an awesome opportunity, whether you're a single income family, a dink, which is double income, no kids, you're a small family, or even like me, a regular size family. HelloFresh can deliver you meal kits that can feed every single person in your family while allowing you, with your limited time, to absolutely create one of the most amazing meals possible by using their pre-measured ingredients, their full recipe cards, and their service. So do us, Bobby, Taylor, myself, and Nick a favor. Go to HelloFresh, again, America's number one meal kit. You can get easy seasonal recipes, pre-measured ingredients, all delivered to your front door. And all you have to do is use the promo code /CLNS80 or just enter CLNS80 in the promo code window when you're on the site to take advantage of this awesome offer. So with that, get away from the ad now. I hope
we
did a good read, Bob.
No, I'm not a dink. I have one more semester of college.
Dude, it doesn't matter. You're a single income household. You can absolutely use HelloFresh because every now and then, dude,
exactly.
Whether you're
dink,
in college cooking on a hot
kids,
plate, because that's exactly how I rolled back in, I don't want to say when, but we'll call it the century that started 19. but near the end of it, all I had was a hot plate and a microwave in my dorm. And then when I moved to the frat, we didn't have much more than that because nobody really knew how to cook. And if you did cook, you had a nickname you didn't want. So needless to say, HelloFresh would be an awesome opportunity because you can get this shit taken care of, whether it's just feeding you and a friend, feeding you and a family. It's a great solution, especially for busy people that come home. They have a long commute. It's a great sponsor to have for our post game on CLNS Media. And it's a great company. I use them and I think you guys should too, but regardless, back to the game at hand, back to this 119-93 win for the Boston Celtics over the Charlotte Hornets tonight. Since I have the triad of NBA and Eastern Conference brilliance around me with Nick, Taylor, and Bobby, why don't I ask you guys, looking ahead, knowing that you have Toronto on Christmas Day and looking beyond that, how do you see the next 2 weeks playing out for our Boston Celtics? And I'll start with Taylor because he's my co-host tonight. And then, you know, Taylor, you can either lead it to Bobby or to Nick, but let's talk about where we see this team in the next 2 to 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, so unfortunately, Nick is no longer with us. Not that.
We lost the Nick.
But yeah. So, I mean, like, you've got Toronto on Christmas. That'll be a big game. I think that's a winnable game. Cleveland's a winnable game. Again, against Toronto, it's a winnable game. So you get through the end of the year. You have Charlotte again on New Year's Eve. The next four games, they're all winnable. If you look at the Celtics schedule, the way they're playing, all of these games are winnable. Having Toronto twice in three games is
that's
a very
tough.
Big test coming. You know, they're on a three-game win streak right now, so I think it's important for them to pick up at least one of those wins. They beat Toronto already. They've played well against some Eastern Conference teams. They just have to keep getting those wins to keep proving that they are at the level they're playing at. Bob, what do you think?
I think this win streak could get to 10. Now, the only one I'm worried about, getting a little ahead of myself there, aren't I?
Yeah.
The only one I'm worried about is Toronto on the second half of that back-to-back that they have. Christmas is in Toronto. The second half in Boston. if you guys remember, they played the Nets on a similar back-to-back earlier in the year, and they smoked the Nets in the first half, and then Brooklyn came back, adjusted, saw what Boston was doing, and was able to really stick it to them in New York. Different dynamic this time with it being road and then home on the back end. It probably helps a little bit along with the losses Toronto is
suffering
from right now. But yeah, you know, this is really interesting, guys. I hate to take it in this direction, but it's something I've been thinking about is, you know, the NBA has been talking a lot about changing the schedule and trying to ease things up, travel, back-to-backs, all that different kind of stuff. I really like these back-to-back matchups between teams. You know, I'm not going full baseball and saying teams should play each other three times in a row in a series and then, you know, have that be the structure of the schedule. But they should try to sprinkle these in more often where teams, I don't know, maybe stick in a city for 2 days, play a couple games against each other, and have that be more of a structure for the schedule. Because it's fun watching these teams adjust, go back and forth. Probably helps parity a little bit too. Because even a bad team can hit the film, adjust the next night, and then come back 2 days later and win a game. And I think that's something Toronto could do over this next stretch.
Yeah, I mean, that'll mess with TV money, and anything that messes with TV money is not going to happen.
Not the fact right there. I mean, the one thing, you know, Bobby, to your point, I think there are ways still with the NBA, which is a wildly popular viewing sport for television viewers, because you have such a bird's eye view of the game when you're watching it on TV. It's like going to a Patriots game and sitting in the 300s versus sitting on your couch and watching the game on CBS. There are way different views of the same game. And it's hard to emulate that CBS view of a Patriots game at the stadium. You almost have to be the mid 100s to kind of get that view. And you don't really share that true view. I think the NBA has opportunities to improve, regular season scheduling, again, to accommodate the athletes. Because ultimately, as a fan, what we're looking for is the best possible performance night in and night out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not interested in seeing who's got the better legs on the back half of a back-to-back home and away, regardless of where it is, whether you're the home team on the back half or the away team on the back half. I don't want to see a game of attrition. You know what I mean? When I'm watching the NBA, I want to see a game of skill, a game of talent, a game of moves. I don't want to see the guys exhausted. You know what I mean? I'd rather see them shorten the number of games in the regular season. Maybe to your point, if you want to build up endurance and make that one of the focal points of the athletes that they draft and the athletes that play on the court, then you jack that up a bit. But overall, I think they have room to improve. I think there's an opportunity for both the NBA, the NHL. The NFL has a kind of down pat, but there's an opportunity for MLB, NHL, and NBA to kind of get into this shortened regular season prolonged by number of days off and generate more interest. You know what I mean?
Because
I think
yeah,
they have
I don't like what they're doing trying to shorten the season and do this mid-season tournament that they're talking about. It's going to be so hard to give that meaning, give that something that people across the league are going to want to go out there and fight for, especially on teams that are already struggling. You see, like Detroit coming in the other night, they were just mailing that in. They had injuries.
Totally.
They're struggling. They're frustrated. I don't think that helps any team like that. And I don't think cutting four games off the schedule, you know, we talk about the TV money. We talk about the structure of the schedule. I don't think it helps any of those things.
No,
you know,
it doesn't.
They have systematic problems, like the Celtics having five games off going against Dallas, who had just been in Milwaukee two nights earlier. Those are the issues that the league still has to get down. I know they're not simple things. I'm not trying to make them out to be simple things. But that is the problem. It's not that people don't care about regular season games or, you know, that.
No, they bang them out. You're right. They bang out every opportunity they have. They bang out the stadium.
Yeah. All right. Well, Celtics win 119-93. I want to thank my co-host, Joe Choquette. I want to thank Nick DeSento for hanging out, Bobby Manning for hanging out. And I want to say goodnight to Jason Tatum, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Romeo Langford, and no one else.
Wow.